It's Monday here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We got multiple topics with multiple teams today. We're going to lead off about the Pittsburgh Steelers with Ray Fittipaldo, talking about our new big board draft rankings that we've been putting out. They're not yet on the website of the Post-Gazette, but we'll give you a sneak peek into Ray's look at the offensive line and where the Steelers might get their reinforcements for the offensive line in the NFL draft this year. Then we go to Noah Hyles with the Pittsburgh Pirates and their hot start. Is this a hot start that can be better than last year's and not fall off a cliff in May? All that here and more on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Let's get into it. You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter. Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Ray Fittipaldo, one of our great Steelers beat writers. We're going to talk a lot of Steelers draft in this show, especially because we've been taking a closer look at how the offensive line class is building, especially at center and tackle. We'll get more on that in a second here. As always, you can find the show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of the daily content that comes out from all of our Pittsburgh sports writers, as well as the Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast. And as always, the show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today because they have over 20 televisions. They've just gotten new renovations, and it's a great place to enjoy before, during, or after Pirates games, where they give you over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. More on Mike's Beer Bar later. Ray, we got updated big board rankings, something you, I, and Brian all worked down and contributed to over the weekend. You were responsible for the offensive line, and Mike Tomlin talked about this at the owners' meeting, saying that this is going to be an offense. It's going to be led by its offensive line. They want to control the ground, and you know that the team has talked about this being a focal point. But this is that if there's one position that they have not addressed much in free agency, it's the offensive line. You know, they've gotten a new corner in Dante Jackson. They've gotten a new linebacker in Patrick Queen. They've gotten a new safety in Deshaun Elliott. You're looking at these guys. They've gotten a whole new quarterback room. But the offensive line that's supposed to be a better group this year didn't get any support there. In fact, they lost Mason Cole as they cut him. We've talked about the potential of bringing him back, you know, and maybe the thought of that, you know, down the line. But when you look at your rankings at specifically center and tackle, because those are the two weaknesses that everyone looks at, replacing Dan Moore and replacing Mason Cole, where do you see as far as the best options for the Steelers to realistically address either one of those positions or even both in this NFL draft?
Yeah, listen, Chris, I tend to think that the Steelers will not draft a center in round one. So I think if you're looking for a spot there, round two or round three, but really, honestly, it depends on how quickly these centers go off the board. Is Jackson Powers Johnson going to be a guy who gets picked maybe at 20 by the Steelers, or more than likely, is he a guy who's going to be maybe late first round, early second round? And then do you see a domino effect with, okay, people are going to start taking centers early second round, mid second round. Maybe that's where guys go off the board. The one change I did make on my big board for centers was I flip-flopped Graham Barton and Zach Frazier. I now have Barton as my number two behind JPJ, and I have Frazier as my number three. Mm. You see Barton starting to gain some traction among the draft analysts. You even see him above JPJ in some top 50 lifts and some mock drafts that you see. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic. But I, you know, as I sit here now, you know, what are we, 17, 18 days away from the draft? Mm-hmm. I don't know that any center is going to be taken in the top 20 to 25 picks. I just think it's going to be a position that teams wait on, and they're going to get their tackles first because this is a very deep and very talented tackle class.
Agreed there, especially on the tackle class. And part of it's also, you know, one, center is just isn't a position of value as much as it used to be in the NFL. And plus, I don't think that there's a clear-cut, super dominant center in this class right now. Like even Graham Barton, who was the best testing guy who can who could potentially play center wasn't traditionally a center at Duke. He played all the different positions, and people are talking about him like he's an offensive tackle. And, you know, maybe he could be a center, maybe he could be a guard, but that flexibility is what makes him really good. And he tested extremely well. And I think that's what people are looking at, both at the combine and in his pro day. People are like, wow, that guy can move, that guy's athletic. We could figure out a way to make him work somewhere on our offensive line. So I get the thing behind that. But Jaxon Powers-Johnson, you know, he doesn't wow you in a lot of respect. He does a lot of things well. Like, it's not like he's going to be a bad center or anything like that. But, right. You know, like, and we've made this comparison before, but Marquise Pouncey, you know, when he was coming out of the draft, everyone was like, yeah, that's going to be a guy. That's going to be a dog. Like, he's going to be a difference maker. And it's just, you know, there's guys that maybe could be that. A lot of people like Zach Frazier, but his, you know, his season ending injury last year kind of derailed his chance to kind of to be in that position. So there's a lot of things that play into the center position not exactly being the Steelers' top target if they were to stay put at 20th overall, or even, make a first round pick there. But offensive tackle, like you said, is the position where that's the high value position on the offensive line. If you look at NFL analysts and what's the most important things, having the best offensive tackles is the most important to a lot of people in today's football. And like you said, there's a lot of talented tackles. There's some guys the Steelers probably won't be able to touch based off of just where we project them to be, like Joe Alt. You know, he's the, you know, I think bar none, he's like the highest ranked offensive lineman. He's probably going top 10. The Steelers wouldn't be able to sniff him. Olu Fashanu out of Penn State is another guy that kind of sits like that, though some people have him dropping down the board a little bit. But who are your top, if you were to pick three tackles right now, who the Steelers should prioritize for the first round as far as options, who would they be in your mind?
So if I was going to prioritize them, and that's a little different than how we have our big board, because our big board is more of a prediction of who's going to be there
right
when the Steelers did pick. But if I had to prioritize right now, Chris, I would say, just based on the pre-draft process, how I saw them react to guys at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, and then the pre-draft visits, my gut feeling right now tells me they like Fuaga the best. And then I think they, you know, I want to wait to see if J.C. Latham comes in for a visit. I think Latham is really talented. I think he's got a chance to be really special. And then Amarius Mims, Steelers went to his pro day. He was in for a visit as well, along with Fuaga. So for me right now, if I had to take an educated guess on where their big board was, I would say Fuaga number one, then Latham Mims 2-3. But, you know, I just don't think Fuaga is going to be there at 20. So our big board is a little bit different in that respect.
I know. I feel you on that. And looking at how they've done things, you know, every time, a big reason why you and everyone around the Steelers report about who comes in and visits is because traditionally the players that the Steelers select in the first round are guys that were a top 30 visit, top brass visited their pro day, and they were a combine, you know, interview there. And sure. So far, Amarius Mims is the only offensive tackle that fits that complete billing. Now, Talisa Fuaga is a little different because he's out in Oregon State, and rarely does the Steelers top brass go out to the West Coast for pro days. But the Steelers did send, I think it was Pat Meyer out there for that. So they've had him for a top 30 visit. They talked to him at the Senior Bowl, and they've had their offensive line coach go talk to him. But like you said, J.C. Latham, it'll be very interesting. If they bring him in, then he will also be the only – he will then join Amarius Mims as one of three players now total that have had the Tomlin trifecta of the NFL Combine invite, the top brass at their pro day, and the top 30 invite, because right now Latham was a formal combine interview. And of course he was at the Tomlin was at his pro day along with Omar Khan and the top brass there. So I hear you on JC Latham there. Now we talked about as far as where the Steelers, you know, priority, you've talked before about how it's looking more and more like Amarius Mims. What would he bring to the table versus those two other guys as far as like potential, what you've seen, and just how you understand their talent stacking up against each other?
Yeah, those other guys have more experience. Those other guys are older. But with Amarius Mims, there are just tons of potential, Chris. I mean, you look at this guy's athletic profile, you look at his size. You know, there aren't guys who are 6'8", you know, 340, 350 pounds who move the way he does. There are very few people on the face of this earth that have that combination of size and athleticism. So you know, the concerns about Amarius Mims, quite honestly, it's twofold. It's only having 8 college starts on his resume, and it's the fact that he was injured for a chunk of last season and missed some time, and he wasn't really able to have really even one full season as a full-time starter at Georgia. So there are those concerns, but when you look at the athletic profile and you kind of project what these guys are going to be maybe 2 and 3 years down the road, I think there could be a debate there that Amarius Mims might be the best or one of the best tackles in this class. But there's also the chance that, okay, maybe he's got more of a bust factor because of the injuries and just the lack of experience. So it's a tough call on him, but if you're really confident about his makeup and you did your homework at Georgia and those people tell you the right things, then I think he'd be a really solid pick at 20 if he's there.
Absolutely. He's Ray Fittipaldo. You can check out all of our big board. Our big board has not, as of right now, been officially updated with all of our picks, but we have worked on them. We have put them together. We're kind of just assembling it to go on the website. But post-gazette.com for all of our NFL draft coverage on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Ray will be back with us at some point later this week, as well as Brian Batko. But we got to turn to the Pittsburgh Pirates because they are playing very well right now. We'll do that with Noah Howells in a sec. But first, remind you, best place to go and enjoy the Pittsburgh Pirates, especially when they're on the road, is Mike's Beer Bar, the best part of Pittsburgh. Mike's Beer Bar is right across the street from PNC Park. You can go to Mike's Beer Bar today. They have 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. And they're always switching new ones in and out so that you're never running out of options. And when you're there, they have over 20 televisions. So whether you want to check out a Pirates game while they're away or go there before there and catch out other sporting events or go there after there to catch out other sporting events while you're in the North Shore, it's the best place to go. They also have amazing food like their steak on a stone, where they bring out you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. And every time you cut off a piece, you just press it into the stone and you choose how well done you want every single bite of your steak. It's Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in Pittsburgh. Get there today. When you do, tell them Chris sent you. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We switch topics over to the Pittsburgh Pirates, who right now have the best record in baseball, tied with the New York Yankees at 8-2. They sit atop the NL Central position. Joining me is my former beat partner and good friend, Noah Hiles, who covers the Pirates for us here at the Post-Gazette. Read all his work at post-gazette.com. Noah, I have to ask, before we get into all the things that the Pirates are doing well, is this a team that you can believe more in than the team last year that started red hot in April and then fell off of a cliff?
I think so. Yes. When I say I like the way you phrase that question, believe more in, because I don't think this is going to be a 100 win team or whatever this win percent. I don't think they're going to win 80% of their games for the rest of the year. And I don't even necessarily believe right now that this is probably a division winning team. I still think that there's going to be some sort of regression to the norm, to the mean. But I do think that I think this team has a better chance to sustain success from, you know, and carry on from its hot start compared to last year. There's a couple of factors as to why. Okay. First things first, last year's team I actually think was a little older by average age. I think I calculated it. I think this year's club is 1 year younger on average. However, the veteran presence on this year's team is different. You've got guys, a lot of guys, who have won World Series championships on this team. Aroldis Chapman, Martin Perez, Michael A. Taylor. These guys have played big-time baseball before. Yes, there were veterans on last year's club as well who had been in big-game situations. But I think those guys were more just kind of side pieces, where the guys that I just named are key parts of your team. Michael A. Taylor, your everyday starting center fielder. Aroldis Chapman's been probably your best bullpen arm through this point in the season. And Martin Perez has been probably your best starter, or one of them. So the fact that you have those three guys, and there are others too, who have played really meaningful baseball, that's one thing I think going for this club, where the veterans, and again, last year's team had veterans as well who had played in big games. Carlos Santana played in the World Series. Rich Hill played a lot of postseason baseball. But I think that these guys have a bigger impact, which means something. The second thing that I think this team has going for it, where it won't collapse after a really good start, is O'Neal Cruz is healthy. knock on wood. That was something where in the ninth game of the season last year, O'Neal Cruz broke his ankle. On the ninth game of this year's season, he hit a walk-off single to beat the Baltimore Orioles. He's around, and with him healthy last year, that team probably flirts with going 500. And if it's competitive in July last year with him, who knows what they do at the deadline. Maybe they make moves and they're competing for the postseason at that time last year. And I obviously understand that injuries are a part of your season and you can't play shoulda, coulda. I'm just saying that that's a big difference with having him at shortstop, having him in the lineup. That's going to make this team a little bit more capable to continue its winning ways. And the final note I have on just the note of sustainability is the guys learned from last year. A lot of the players that you see out there this season were a part of that team that started 20-8 or whatever it was last year. The Brian Reynoldses, the Brian Hayeses, the Mitch Kellers, the David Bednars, and even the role guys like the Connor Joes of the team. They were around when everyone was hot and then everyone cooled off. And I think that just going through that experience together, where a lot of those guys were younger players at the time, now they're maybe established veterans a little bit more. So I think those are some factors where, again, I'm not saying that they're going to continue winning at this pace. I don't expect them to win 8 of every 10. But I think that they might be able to make better use of this cushion that they've provided themselves with, as opposed to last year where it evaporated pretty quickly.
Right. I feel you on that. And that's where I'm just wondering what's the sustainability of this, because part of this, and Jason and I talked about this on the show last year when we saw them, it was like, how will this team deal with a slump? How will they respond when like something bad happens? And they didn't respond well. It took them way too long to get out of bad things. But a lot of things that trend well for this team: they have the third most hits in Major League Baseball, the second most doubles, they've got the second most RBIs, the fourth most total bases, they've earned the most walks this season. Their lineup seems like it has so many different ways to hurt you. And it's not just O'Neal Cruz and Brian Hayes and Brian Reynolds. Michael Taylor seems to be hitting well right now. He's got a good average. Connor Joe, Jared Trulia, you got Rowdy Tellez who comes in and gives you some help there. It seems that this is something that we talked about last year where it was like, hey, like they need help to come from different directions right now so that when one or two or even three guys have a bad day, these two or three guys over here can lift them up. And it seems like there's just more answers on the roster this year than there was for that last year.
Yeah, the depth is so much better on this year's team. Just around the infield, I think the outfield depth is really strong on this group, which I don't think was the case last year necessarily. And there are just some other areas too. I mean, I think this is going to be a lineup that hits a decent amount of home runs. They really haven't done that so far. Cruz, I think, only still has one. Or no, he has two, excuse me. But, you know, guys like Sawinski, you're going to start barreling the ball a little bit more. Brian Hayes hasn't had maybe one home run. These guys are going to start turning these singles into something more. So that's one thing I look at their lineup. And then you look at the pitching. First off, the starting pitching's been pretty good. That was supposed to be the thing that held this team back. Right. They just got three straight quality starts against the Baltimore Orioles. They've had four straight. Their worst starting pitcher on the year has been Mitch Keller. And again, that's just two starts in. I think if I had to guess, he's probably going to figure it out. They certainly need him to. But then you look at some of the other areas with arms. I mean, they've got really good pitching on the way, which we're going to talk about later in the show. And in the bullpen, which has been really good. Some of their biggest bullpen arms haven't really been effective or around. I mean, Bednar's off to a slow start. I don't expect that to continue. Colin Holderman hasn't even played in the major leagues yet. Baraki's on the going to the IL, which I don't anticipate him being there for long. There's a lot of guys where if you would have told me that the bullpen's been great and it's been great because of Luis Ortiz, Jose Hernandez, and Hunter Stratton and all those guys, I would have thought you were crazy. But they've gotten off to a good start, and a big reason why they've been able to do that is because the guys they didn't expect to play this well have played well. And so once your key pieces find their stride midseason form, that again might be a recipe for them to continue doing what they're doing now.
That's what I think as most fans are looking for right now is they want to know, like, hey, who will be the guys that step up down the line. And pitching is also a big part of it, of course. A lot of people were worried about the starting rotation, but just looking at guys and how can they handle it. Will this team just have to rely on its bats for the game? But like you said, they've had some good start, some good starts from guys in this early stretch here that have allowed them to be that. I mean, even Bailey Falter had a good outing the other
day. Right.
Right, like that's what I'm saying. Like, and that those are the things I'm not sure can last. Like, I'm not so sure that like you can count on the players that aren't of the higher caliber guys on your team to continue to. But when they can give you pinches here and there, and you have reliable guys that can carry you, that can be the difference maker. But like you alluded to, and we're about to talk about this next segment, there's other guys on the way that are in the minors right now, and everyone's looking at it, one in particular, and that's Paul Skeens. I want to get your thought on what he's done in the minors, as well as other guys that people should be on the lookout for here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Noah Hiles, we'll be right back. We're back here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter talking with Noah Hiles, one of our Pittsburgh Pirates beat reporters here at the Post-Gazette. Noah, let's talk about the young guns in the minors. Now, we've seen Jared Jones come up, and he's been impressive. I think he actually leads the team in strikeouts right now with 17. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. But everyone wants to know, when will Paul Skeens come up? How is he doing? What's this process? Can you give an estimation when you expect Skeens to make his first start and become a real part of the starting rotation?
Well, when I spoke to Skeens on Easter weekend, he told me that they had the plan was for him to go three. His last start in spring was three innings, and then his first two starts in AAA were going to be three innings, which we saw him do. So now I would imagine he's probably going to go two more where he goes four innings, and then probably two where he goes five. That should take us into May. I would expect him to be up around May. If all of this continues, obviously, if he hits a hurdle and he isn't playing as well, that might lead to a recalculation of things and they might have to, push back some timetables. But if this current pace continues and if he keeps checking these boxes, I just don't see how they can keep him in AAA until June or July, Carter. He is, for my money, I think he has the best stuff in this organization. I've heard people say that, the moment he comes up, he is stuff-wise a top 15 pitcher in the game, with just being an MLB rookie. So I think that, I wouldn't be shocked about a month from now. It's going to be very, very close to Paul Skeens time. I'm just looking. I don't know how, it's all going to play out with just the schedule and everything. But I think he's probably got 3 to 4 more starts in him in AAA. But I would expect he's with the Pirates by late May. But there's also a thought, and I've had a conversation with a couple of people, and they said, another thing that might affect his timetable is how the big league club's doing. I mean, if they keep winning at a high rate without him, that might also kind of slow things down as far as his timetable, just because, why not keep him developed and you get him stretched out to seven and you throw him on there right around June. And that's your big trade acquisition near the deadline. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that mentality. I still think overall, May is probably the timetable we're looking at with this.
That it's interesting to think about that too, because like when you're talking about like, hey, if they're doing well, maybe you take more time, maybe you kind of push it back a little bit longer. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, wait a minute longer, get him in there, get full steam ahead. Like you and I, we grew up in Western Pennsylvania. We know about the Pittsburgh Pirates and the few times in our sports watching lives that the Pirates have been relevant to playoff conversations. And it's been like, look, when you get it, you got to go for it. And so I hear fans and they're like, well, why isn't he up now? But I also understand like the Pirates, they know that in the long run, Skeens is most likely not going to live out his whole life as a Pittsburgh Pirate. They need to maximize this time now before he is signed away by a big paying team, several years down the line here. And part of that plays into the strategy here. But also, I think it's part of the young guns that they've assembled also that are also down to the minors with him. You got guys like Quinn Priester that people are waiting on. Who are some of the names that people should know the most of as far as minor leaguers that could come up sometime this year or that are maybe a little bit further down the line?
In addition to Skeens, I would say, yeah, Quinn Priester's a guy that's going to be up here at some point in the season. I don't know. I was encouraged from what I saw from him in his first start. I think that his biggest issue has been velocity, and his velocity seems to be up. I think that if he can figure out just a couple of things in AAA, then yeah, he's an additional arm that you would like to see in that starting rotation. Everyone is pitching pretty well in that rotation now, but you know, you're going to have some injuries. Like that's just how pitchers get hurt. That's just how baseball goes. He would probably be one of the first guys to get the call up if that were to occur. Quinn Priester is a guy that will be a part of this team at some point this year. Another guy that I think people aren't necessarily talking enough about is a guy named Michael Plassemeyer. He started for the Indianapolis Indians on opening day. He's 27 years old. He's not, you know, in the same conversation as a Jones or a Skeens or even, you know, the next wave of guys like a Priester, but he's someone who I think can come up and still probably do something with the major league team this year, even if it's just a couple of spot starts. He's been pretty good so far in AAA, and I wouldn't be shocked to hear his name, you know, in the mix later in the year, maybe even in a situation where it's like they have a doubleheader. They need someone to just come up, pitch in the second game and go right back to AAA. But those guys matter. I mean, people who followed the 2013 through 15 Pirates are familiar with the name Brandon Compton, like that guy who only came up for a couple of starts, but they were because every game's a big game when you're competing for a division race, a pennant race. So Michael Plassemeyer is a guy that I could see having a little bit of an impact as far as guys who maybe aren't going to be up this year, but are certainly names to pay attention to. There are three really notable arms in Altoona that I would encourage Pirate fans to get out there and see before they're heading over to Indianapolis. Braxton Ashcraft is the first. I think he's rated the number 7 prospect in the Pirates system, a guy who's coming back from some surgeries and everything. And he's a part of the 40-man roster, which means he might not be as far as some people think from reaching the big league club. And then the other two arms, the young guns, I think will probably be the final pieces to this puzzle that Ben Cherington has, you know, put together throughout this rebuild. The final is the final wave of reinforcements. Two major ones are Bubba Chandler and Anthony Solomato. Both of these guys are top 100 prospects in Major League Baseball, both elite pitching talents who are in AA right now, both very young, drafted out of high school, and guys that I wouldn't put them in the Skeens category, but they're definitely in the Jared Jones category. Okay. As far as electric stuff, just total raw talent and guys who will be up here pretty young. And I don't see either of those two being in the major leagues this year just because of their youth and inexperience. But those are the guys a year from now who we'll be talking about, like we're currently talking about with like Skeens. Like when is Anthony Solomato going to be up here? When is Bubba Taylor going to be here? If all things continue to go well for both of them.
He's Noah Hiles. He covers the Pirates for us here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. The Pirates get back out there at PNC Park, 6:40 p.m. tonight against the Tigers, and then again on Tuesday before they start hitting the road against the Phillies and the Yankees. Noah, thank you so much for joining us here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. As always, you can find this show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of our daily content that comes out for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, as well as our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast. We're back Wednesday talking more things Pittsburgh sports here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.